Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Welcome back. You're with Greenwashed. I'm Jaspreet here with Don Nicholson. And if you're just joining us this morning, we spoke with Dr. Muriel Newman from the New Zealand Centre for Political Research earlier today. And if you missed that one, you can catch a replay later tonight. Now, Don and I think, Don, it's time for the climate crazy.
Yeah, let's launch into it. There's plenty on this week.
There's plenty on this week, but I will hark back to last week. For the benefit of some who may have missed Don and my discussion with Councillor Elizabeth Munt from the Selwyn District Council, while we spoke last week about Lake Ellesmere and what's happening to some of the huts around that and people who've had leases there for generations, I've seen a couple of stories now in our media following up from that one. So let's go into one of these on the Otago Daily Times website, which says, dated 1st of August, discrimination claim in bid to evict residents from Canterbury Lakeside Settlement. You go into the details and it says, a bid to let Naitahu batch owners stay at a Canterbury Lakeside Settlement while others will be evicted has been deemed as discriminatory. 32 batch owners at Green Park Huts next to Lake Ellesmere have till 38th June next year to leave the Naitau-owned site. The EV wants all residents out of the settlement due to unconsented wastewater systems, climate change concerns, and to protect the culturally significant area. But the closest marae to the settlement, the Tamutu Ronunga, has asked Naitau to allow EV members to stay. And the motion was passed by a close 11-10 vote by its executive recently. Well, I thought, Don, climate change was colorblind.
Yep. Carbon dioxide doesn't say it's not a racist molecule. But boy, this is edgy stuff, isn't it? It's edgy stuff.
I don't even understand how the country's come to this, Don.
Oh, yeah. I can. This has been evolving ever since the Waitangi Tribunal was formed in 1976. This has been a slow creep to, basically, it's sort of like a reverse takeover, you might say. It's an odd phenomena, but I find this the thin end of the wedge, and I hope the people of the area can find a way through this. When you have to employ lawyers, which it looks like the most affected parties are threatening to do. Yeah, I don't know. It just seems so wasteful.
But, you know, in part, actually, I stand corrected. I do know about it. I think I mentioned earlier on the show that we are the only country in the world to have two climate commissions. One of them seems to be rather quiet. We have a climate commission, which is supposedly for all New Zealanders. And we have a Maori Climate Commission. You can find them at maoriclimatecommission.co.nz. And the commissioner is Donna Avatare-Hauta, who took on the role after, the website says, a lifetime spent as a fierce advocate for the Treaty of Waitangi and an equally fierce opponent for the ongoing colonization and racism towards Maori. Now, I haven't heard a lot from this office, I must say. Maybe it's just there and it's not doing anything. But perhaps this is where the Maori Climate Commission should step in, shouldn't it, Don?
Well, making mountains out of molehills is what annoys me here. There is tension in this whole surrounding area, not only the Green Park huts, the Lower Selwyn huts, the Upper Selwyn huts, the Birdlings Flat communities. It's a cluster, and I can't explain it clearly, but this tension has been boiling or bubbling away for a long, long time. And now to have this at the 12th hour is around coercion and manipulation. And it's unacceptable, actually.
It is.
You're right. You're right, Jaspreet. This country should be colorblind to stuff, and it damn well isn't.
I never thought I'd be talking about this in the climate crazy segment. Mm. We are going into race and ethnicity, but that's what it comes to, and that's where Don and I will go.
Yes, yeah. And there's lots of other things in play on that in that area, not just this. There is that $30 million worth of commitment by the government on the spit for the rocket launching pad.
Yes, that's
that the community
that's
didn't
thing.
Seem to know about.
Yeah. No. So RNZ has covered that, that fishing or rockets, the space operator denies involvement in lakeside hut evictions because an 83-year-old Canterbury fisherman raised a bit of a noise here, wanting to know if he was being given the heave-ho because the company wanted to launch rockets. Mm. And it's RNZ revealed that the Tawahaki National Aerospace Center is speaking to unidentified international partners about having multiple launch pads on the spit there.
Mm.
But it's funny. 1 week we are told that this demand has grown rapidly on this RNZ article from the U.S. military. But then the New Zealand Space Agency says it doesn't know that there's any interest around Lake Ellesmere and that spit as a rocket launching site.
It's almost
time will tell.
It's almost like it's veiled in secrecy, but they've allocated $30 million. I mean, someone knows what's going on.
Knows what's going on. This thing is, yeah. It's anything but clear. Very, very murky waters there.
Murky waters there. There's plenty of murky waters in this country.
Yeah, plenty of murky waters.
What else have we got in our climate crazy bin?
Well, Olympics, the gift that keeps on giving. So last week, the Australian reported, and this was the heading of that news article, "Let them eat steak." Emergency stocks of meat and eggs flown into Paris Olympics. More than 700 kgs of eggs and a ton of extra meat has been flown in to replace the fake meat and non-dairy options that athletes have not been enjoying. Protests over food came as team officials and athletes complained about a lack of air conditioning, scratchy, uncomfortable beds, long walks to cafeterias, and so on. And Australian competitors have actually gotten some shuttle vans. They talk of, you know, low carb Olympics. It's all not going to plan. Not going to plan.
Look, if you're a highly tuned athlete, you definitely want your regular food. So how the heck the Olympic Village thought they could cater for lesser mortals, I don't know. I just it's weird that they thought they could get away with it. But hey, I'm sure it's been remedied. There's no one. You wonder, have they had their performance altered? Well, maybe they have. I did notice that one of the swimmers in the triathlon, the woman swimmers, was pretty upset with swimming in the Seine because she found things rubbing against her body that just didn't seem the sort of stuff she wanted to have rubbing against her body other than the water.
Let's not go there. Murky waters, yeah.
The murky waters.
Lake Ellesmere to France, yeah.
And going back to Auckland, what about the Auckland plant-based cafe putting meat back on the menu? They found that doing plant-based food was quite expensive and actually putting a bit of meat back in, real meat, yeah, sort of just lowers the price of stuff. Weird that too, isn't it? Funny.
Yeah, everyone says you don't eat meat, you save money and...
And the planet.
Yeah. But I just wonder, so the name of the cafe, Don, is The Kind Cafe.
Yeah.
Are they going to have to change their name now? The Unkind Cafe? Or am I being unkind? That, don't answer that.
Not subtle enough, sorry. Not subtle enough. What else? We've got... there was another one that I liked. The flower power daffodils could cut methane emissions.
Now,
look, if you've ever known, they may have some chemical in them. That's great. I'm not going to dispute that. I'm not a scientist, but certainly the animals that have access to daffodils when they're really growing don't eat them. There's nothing nice about
that. And actually, even though if you are not a scientist, we're going to have a scientist coming on later today in the show talking about this in greater detail while Dawn and I are doing this once over lightly. But methane, 1.8 parts per billion of the atmosphere. We are worried about that. Man, talk about job schemes for Maidstone. That's all this is.
Yeah, it is. But look, and I have to get the daffodils, I assume the bulbs, from a specific location. Where was that? Was it in the Highlands of Wales, I think, specifically.
Yes.
The other thing that came out of one of our climate crazy researchers, can the Olympics survive the climate crisis? And, of course, in 2024, the Olympic Games opened on the same week. Earth recorded its hottest day ever.
The ever just begins in the last 150 years, doesn't it, Don?
No, ever just began from yesterday. But funnily enough, we go through the article and it is about the Summer Olympics and then it transitions to the Winter Olympics in 2030. And they cannot decide emphatically where they want the Winter Olympics of 2030 because they can't guarantee the snow will be around. So they're actually doing a bit of forward planning.
Why does this date of 2030 figure everywhere, John? You talk about the SDGs, you talk about the Paris Accord, you talk about anything, that's 2030 or 2050.
Oh, 2050s, 2030s. Yeah, we know we're not going to meet the targets. Look at Air New Zealand. They failed miserably in their 2030 targets and they've had to come out and admit it. I mean, gosh, heck, they've got an advisor called James Shaw, former Minister for Climate Change, on their Sustainability Advisory Committee. Now, perhaps he's done his job. I initially thought, oh, heck, in New Zealand, that's a big admission. Mm. But on the other side of it, maybe James is doing his job. He's slowly turning the Air New Zealand machine off. We haven't got the new planes in time. Maybe he wants less planes. Maybe that's his ambition. Maybe he's infiltrated them and given his advice and says, oh, we're going to have less planes in the air, less CO2 emissions. I'm doing my job. Am I being facetious? Am I being, but out there?
Oh, knowing you and knowing James Shaw, I would put nothing. I would, not discredit anything, Don.
Well, initially, my first thoughts were, James Shaw's had to eat a few dead rats to have let this through because he's only been on that advisory panel for a few months and already they've had to admit they can't meet their 2030 targets. So, I think
But the other thing that about this particular news that you and I are talking about is the fact that it has not been covered, and maybe some of our listeners may not even be aware of it, that Air New Zealand has become the first major airline in the world, our national carrier, that has decided to dump the 2030 targets. And it has said, and I've seen more coverage of this on Fox, CNBC, CNN, even Indian news, than I have seen in New Zealand news. Mm. Because what has it said? It has said that the solutions are costly and scarce. Well, hello. I could have told you that for nothing. And how much have the taxpayers bailed out Air New Zealand by? There's no end to that.
Well, it started in 2001 or two. I think there was about an $885 million bailout because they were in trouble. And I think then the New Zealand taxpayer bought about 85% of it. So the government owned that much of it. And then, of course, that was sold down, I think about 2013 to around 53%. And just through the COVID years, I think they've been bailed out again to the tune of, is it hundreds of millions again? I'm not sure whether they were bailed out this 2020, bailed out in Air New Zealand with another $900 million loan in March 2020, by the look of it. So they've had plenty of taxpayer injection and have been so virtuous at the same time. Of course, when you're 51% owned by the government, you are going to toe the line with government policy. And the government policy was to have these 2030 targets. But it comes at great cost. And of course, there was a guy, what was his name? Let me get this. John Higham from the Griffith University in Australia, who's their tourism expert, he said if even Air New Zealand can't do it, it kind of cements the reality that reducing emissions from aviation is an impossible task under the current technical regime. So
that's a big admission. And Don, you might have hit the nail on the head there when you said that is James Shaw, who's now on the Air New Zealand board. Is he now doing his job, which is effectively,
Not on the board, on the advisory panel.
Advisory panel, I stand corrected.
Yeah.
That to make us stop flying. Because, about 3 or 4 years ago, the University of Cambridge was given a report to do on net zero. They called it absolute zero by the UK government. And I'm quoting from that report dated 29th November 2019. They called the UK Fires, just as it sounds for anyone wanting to look at us. It said that the two big challenges we face with an all-electric future are flying and shipping. Although there are lots of new ideas about electric planes, they won't be operating at commercial scale within 30 years. So zero emissions means that for some period, about a decade or so, we'll all stop using aeroplanes. Shipping is more challenging, although there are a few military ships run by nuclear reactors. We currently don't have any large electric merchant ships, but we depend strongly on shipping for imported food. So they were talking 5 years ago about there being a period of time when humanity would no longer be flying.
Well, and this John Higham, the sustainability expert from Griffith University, said the only way for airlines to substantially reduce aviation emissions was to fly less. Air New Zealand has tried everything, really. Sustainable aviation fuels, carbon offsetting programs, and it all sounds good, but nothing's changing. Now, I would agree, nothing's changing, unless we're going to fly less. I know there's big tension right now about the fares that are being charged on some regional flights within New Zealand.
We'll get to flying in a moment. Yep, there's a climate crazy news about that one as well.
Yep. But, you know, we've got this offsetting going on with the planting of trees around New Zealand by Air New Zealand, Genesis Energy, Z, and I think it's Contact Energy. I've got this group. And, you know, you question their logic, really. They've been coerced into doing it. They've, as I said, two of those players or three of them have government shareholdings in them. And if you've got a government saying you are going to, we're going to apply these rules, if you're owned by, in part by the government, you're going to tick all the boxes. It's a bit like Landcorp being owned by the state for farming. Yeah, every time the government says jump, who's the first person to jump with a rule on farming? Landcorp.
Landcorp.
And do they make a lot of money? Well, hell no, they don't. So we dig our holes for ourselves. This is just another one. And I go back to planting trees. They're planting, there's a lot of tension about where some of these forests for the ETS forests are being planted, especially in the Marlborough region. There seems to be a lot of tension there. And
In biodiversity hotspots, there's some of these trees are planted. But after all of that, today an admission there. So what's coming next? I'll again go back to the UK Fires report, which very clearly 5 years ago said that there has to be a period when you cannot fly, and their targets are, because they put up a handy dandy pictorial graph at the end, and it says by 2029, all airports except Heathrow, Glasgow, and Belfast will close with transfers by rail. Then the graph goes on to say from 2030 to 2049, all remaining airports close. And they remain closed till from 2049 till well beyond 2050, till they say beyond 2050. Electric airplanes may being the keyword, fly with synthetic fuel once there are excess non-emitting electricity supplies. Do you know what that means? This is a UK government document talking about the fact that you plebs are not going to be flying again. So, as Don hit the nail on the head, time will tell if you're all New Zealand bound here, Don.
And look, great. You've got a fantastic memory, Jasreet, because I remember you put that in front of this audience about a year ago, and we haven't nearly used it enough, have we, to remind them, but we have to stay on message in volume over time. We need to keep putting this out there. And so fantastic you've remembered that, because I hadn't. And
now, because the moment you said James Shaw doesn't want us to fly, I'm like, there's other governments that have openly said that, not that they don't want you to fly, you won't be flying, you'll be closing all airports by 2039.
Well, within any luck, all this 2030 stuff will fall away, and we will focus on efficiency drivers for all of the resources we use in the world. Everything will be around efficiency, and it shouldn't be about you can't do stuff, which is what the angle is here. That's about doing less. We just want to have the efficient use of our resources. And as we've talked about before, the evolution of ideas will get us to manage that efficiency. And that's all we should be looking for.
And not these captured so-called free markets, which are essentially all working in sync to destroy any sense of freedom that you might have.
Yeah, we talked about it last week. Crony capitalism is alive and well at your expense, really, and at our peril. We let it happen, and we're letting corporates influence the political machinery of a country, and it's just got to be terminated, actually.
Yeah.
It's got to be terminated.
But I'll still stick with Air New Zealand because, you know, this is such big news for a first big international carrier stopping this. Mm. Maybe when they're stopping this, could someone send them a memo that they also stop their whole DEI agenda, their diversity, equity, and inclusion agenda? Because yep. that sure as heck has not stopped. Their last year's annual sustainability report began by saying that the future of our entire planet depends on the global transition to net zero. So how times have changed. Within a year, that's all gone. But they are still talking about the fact that at the center of all of this, they say the United Nations 2030 agenda and the 17 sustainable development goals. They also talk about the fact that they have signed a World Economic Forum's Clean Skies Accord. So, you know, all the movers and shakers that we talk about, the United Nations, the SDGs, the World Economic Forum, they all figure in there. But they go on to say that they have a program for aspiring Maori and Pacifica leaders that has evolved over 2023 with the focus moving to completing the program projects. Now, I don't know about you, but when I go in a plane, all I want is safety. Service would be great, but service comes second to safety.
Safety is it.
Yes.
That's it. Because that's it one time and well,
get
many
me back
times.
To terra firma.
Yeah, you're out of control. Once you are in that aeroplane, you have lost control of your own sort of safety net. So you put your hands in the hands of somebody else. So safety is number one.
And then,
you don't need a cup of tea. You don't need a biscuit for a 1 hour flight. You don't need all that stuff. You just want to know you get up and get down
in one piece.
Yeah.
So the sustainability report last year's, it says, we also spend time reviewing and refreshing our diversity, equity, and inclusion strategy. We strengthen our commitment in this place. And with the support of our employee networks, we have renewed our accessibility, rainbow and gender ticks. And this year we have achieved the advanced gender tick.
Yeah.
And I looked at the advanced gender tick and there's so many organizations working at this because I thought I knew the gender ticks, but it seems there's other things that companies have to do, including have the menopause toolkit and stuff like that there. Yeah, he laughs.
I laugh.
And seriously, what is an airline doing all of this stuff?
Let's take
great service, great safety standards. Yep. That's it. End of story. But, their interview, was it, I'm forgetting who, there was a short soundbite with, but they mentioned that we are in the core business of flying. Well, funny that. We are in the core business of farming, us in the primary sector, who you seem to think have to be in the business of emissions mitigation.
Yep. Yeah, look, it annoys me when they become so virtuous over everybody else's lives, even their own. Yeah, we look after ourselves. I know you do. I look after myself. I know others perhaps need their hand held, but there's a point when it gets too much. And I think Air New Zealand's way over the top. And when I read something about how they've got about 1,300 managers for 12,000 staff, I sort of thought, easy to see why things get out of control. Yeah, but anyway, it's disappointing. Hopefully there's going to be some realignment. I mean, they talk about their ongoing engagement with our stakeholders. Now, you know how I think about the word stakeholders.
I think stakeholder capitalism, I think Klaus Schwab done.
Yeah, so they talk about communities, customers, employees, government and regulators, investors, suppliers, tourism industry, and unions. Mm. Regular and then industry and sustainability bodies. And there's a whole list of them there. As you said, Jasper, we just want to know that we have a safe flight at the right price. Look, I think there's a reality check coming to you, coin the phrase, reality check coming for Air New Zealand. They've been bailed out twice in this century, as far as I can see, and my research, I hope, is accurate.
Mm.
And yet they thought they could continue down this track of
endless
being so virtue precious
signaling
and,
right, at our
and
cost.
Righteous. Yeah, righteous at our cost. Yep.
Yeah.
So I
don't think much of the statement by the NEVA scientist Sam Dean, who spoke on their behalf with Heather Duplessis-Allen when they ditched this a few days back. But Sam said, fundamentally, Air New Zealand's business is about flying planes. And as they have openly said, they are dependent on a whole lot of things that are out of their control. That very same reasoning can be applied to every other sector across the world. Teachers, about teaching. Hospitals, about saving lives. Roading, about saving lives. Farming, about feeding your bellies. Not one of these is about this mythical beast that you call climate change.
Yeah, mythical beast. Yeah, quite a good term. But you know, there's people trying to make it real and create all that anxiety, as some of the other climate crazies you've got on this week in the list. Jaspreet, help me hire, help me hire, or Hera, how would you say that? Crikey, yeah. Dick.
So that's an agony aunt column there.
Yeah.
Which says someone's written to this lady, I would say, Hera Lindsay Bird. Help me, Hera. How do I tell people I don't want to fly overseas without sounding judgy? And the letter goes on to say, I remember vividly back 2005 when the penny dropped from me about climate change being a thing. Since then, I've been trying to reduce my emissions, use public transport, eat less red meat, only buying essentials. I'm trying to do my bit. I don't judge others. I'm not a vegan, a cyclist, a childless Extinction Rebellion activist, though my heart is with these. But there's a privilege alert. How do I say no to invitation of international travel? What I can meet family overseas, but what do I say to spas in Bali with my bestie or reunions with my 90s work colleagues from the Four Corners who I love dearly? My husband loves to travel, and even though I've told him about my strong aversion to non-essential travel, he doesn't understand. Is there something wrong with me? How do I manage this and stay true to my beliefs? I can't believe it. Is this parody?
Oh, well, it is agony aunt stuff that you would have once upon a time had in your, you know, the weeklies that came out. Now we've got it coming at us on social media. I mean,
wasn't that about, you know, teenage angst or sex lives or relationships? Was this ever about emissions, John?
Well, perhaps not that intense, but this is quite out there. I mean, she's a bit older than Greta, but she's acting like Greta Thunberg, that is.
Oh, gosh. And then there is the advice that she's been given that go into these conversations without the intention of convincing people you are right. It's fine to simply say, I would love to see you, but I don't fly anymore. How about a rail trip? Don't turn down every invitation with a climate manifesto. But Hera sort of sympathizes with the lady, seeing that, and I think it's a lady because she refers to her husband, and I'm old-fashioned like that, that the stakes are very high. We need to do something. It's hard not to feel powerless at the sheer magnitude of all of this. Oh, my goodness. It just goes on and on and on about this.
Yeah.
And then this lady goes on to even talk about the current government and that they're deregulating some of the environmental stuff, and you may need a spot in Peter Thiel's apocalypse bunker.
That is now not being built because he's said it's not happening just last week. So she's out of date. Anyway, we shouldn't give that any more airtime, should we?
Maybe this lady
could go.
And if she's around, or if they are around Auckland, there's this on at the Auckland Theatre called this play, parody, whatever is this, called Scenes from a Climate Era. And I am going to see if I can play a short clip. She might find this inspiring here.
It's too big to be a crisis. I think it's an era.
Era's end, right? The medieval era ended, Renaissance ended. Does the climate era end?
I would describe Scenes from the Climate Era as a collection of scenes over 1,000 years, spanning from the past, present, and future.
Like a smorgasbord of 25 scenes that give you a different flavor. We're giving you a rapid menu, each with different ingredients. Every ingredient is based on things that have ever happened are happening or are likely to happen, all based on science.
All based on science.
That was spooky. That was spooky.
If someone would actually care to listen, this lady could actually get her anxiety down if she just has a physics lesson, perhaps, about knowing about saturation and the fact that each carbon dioxide molecule doesn't act like the last one. And after a certain point, you can keep on adding as much CO2 as you want to the atmosphere and nothing changes. Or perhaps, if she's not scientifically inclined, a physics history lesson would be in order. If she goes back just over the last 1,000 years and realizes that the medieval warm period just over a millennia ago was much warmer than it was today, and civilizations just thrived. And England beat France in the quality of wine its vineyards produced in that balmy weather. But that's me, you know.
Yep, the realist here. Yeah, the reality check there needs to happen as well. So look, there's lots of reality checks needed today. Hopefully we're giving people some. But look, there's so much more on. You know, the gas shortage has the energy industry in distress, apparently, and rightly so. I think we've got a problem looming. We've had Larry Blair on that talks about how we're going to have that sort of concern with less gas available unless we find some soon.
Yep, we are running out of time, but there's one thing I would mention, seeing that we began the climate crisis section by referring to our interview last week with the Selwyn District Councillor Elizabeth Munt talking about the sea level rise modelling, which amongst others has gotten Naithau to want the huts around Lake Ellesmere vacated. I saw this opinion piece, I'd call it, by ex-Christchurch Mayor Leanne Denzel over the weekend, saying that Cyclone Gabriel, this is the title of the article, if I sound a little frustrated, it is because I am. And she is speaking about the fact that, number one, she refers to Michael Baker, the COVID expert, now turned public health communication expert, that his PHCC, Public Health Communication Center, is asking why there has been no national inquiry into Cyclone Gabriel, despite its immense impact on the well-being of the country. She talks about human well-being. And then she goes on to say, and I'm going to try quoting this, she says, she refers to a report talking about, you know, how seas are rising and how do we plan for infrastructure in the future. She says, one of the features in this report that stood out for me was that some rivers had experienced a 1,000-year return period event. This overwhelmed stop banks that have been built to a 100-year return period standard. So what she is actually saying here for the layman, the ex-mayor of Christchurch, she's saying that stop banks have been traditionally made for a 1-in-100-year flood. And what we are seeing right now is 1-in-1,000-year floods happening. Somehow she's reached that conclusion, even though it was not that long ago, 50 years ago, was it somewhere around that 80 years ago, that the same place in Hawke's Bay had been flooded in the past, Gisborne. And she is wanting infrastructure to be made to survive a 1,000-year event. The costs, the sheer impact of something like this, again, based on airy-fairy modeling of what you think will happen in the next 1,000 years when you can't even predict what's going to happen next weekend. Am I mad in thinking there's something intrinsically wrong about a bureaucrat thinking like that?
No, not mad at all. And by the way, listeners, just go back if you can and listen to Paul Brennan interviewing Ian Wishart last week sometime. It was in the last week of July, actually, about the Hawke's Bay Cyclone Gabriel era and heavy rainfall Niwa. Events that have gone, about Niwa. Yeah, so look at that. But the former mayor is spooking people into thinking that they have to do that. And it gets worse, in my opinion, because ECAN, Environment Canterbury, where she is living, talks about now a 1-in-200-year flooding event is what you need to build your resilience to. But we have evidence now from a person that has written into us saying that there's ECAN engineers or planners demanding 1 in 500 year resilience building. It is getting out of hand. And again, we need the Minister for the Environment and the Minister for Local Government and whoever else can do it to put the stoppers on these people. I mean, there's another element in this too, Jaspreet. Some people are now saying, let's not have flood banks at all. Let the free flow of the water happen.
Nature-based solutions.
Yeah, nature-based.
And, do nothing and be happy.
And, you know, you'll get the silt. Yeah, yeah. You'll get the silt built up around and you'll be fertile and there'll be more floods come through and, you know, you'll have this braided river effect. Well, all fine and dandy, but, you know, to some. But what's happening, we're very aware of it. In-river management is possible in some of these catchments and it needs to be done. But there's agencies in New Zealand that will not let this in-river management happen so that the flooding events we now have appear much worse than they need to be because there's gravel banks not taken out and things like that. So, you know, and then you get the likes of what's happened in Wairoa recently where the locals know to open the bar, but, you know, just
it wasn't slow. Done in time.
Too slow.
By the regional agency.
Yeah, so look, we've got lots on, Jaspreet. We could have gone into John Kennedy's.
But I think there's oh yeah, but there's one thing that we had Dr. Muriel Newman. She ended the interview on this note saying that if there's one thing you can do, it's take back control. It is to start emailing, talking, sending out emails to as many of your local and center government people in charge that you can. That's one thing one can do. If you've got a river around you and you see the flood banks not being maintained, you see the gravel piling up, take pictures, start emailing. This is what your local government is supposed to be doing for you. This is their job. And if you don't do it, you yourself are somewhat, I believe, complicit.
And sometimes, and so I think I took out of that interview with Dr. Newman was don't do form letter like
one template.
Submissions, one template. Don't do petitions necessarily. You need to put stuff in your own words and address it directly. They have to respond to you. They have to. Now, they will try and obfuscate and skirt around. You need to be ready to write letter number 2, 3, 4. But it's what you've got to do to get the attention. And when people realize there's a lot of attention coming one way at them, one direction, they will move their...
The tide will turn.
Yeah, the tide will turn.
And so, that's what you need to do. Otherwise, you're going to have this modeling. Suddenly, you might be living in an area which is now deemed to be susceptible to floods. Your insurance might rise up really high. Meanwhile, your local authorities are doing nothing to manage the river. So let's be proactive.
Well, we've got to be practical. And before it gets too well entrenched through all this planning machinery, it is out of control at the moment. We have these people who want to police and surveil and then charge you.
not just
charge you as if guilty, but also want a dollar and cents charge against you. I'm sick of it. And I think most New Zealanders are sick of it because when it hits them, they think, where did this come from? So we have been, as Muriel, Dr. Newman said, quite timid and effectively quite lazy in effect. We've talked about this often. Anyway, Jaspreet, there was so much more we could have talked about. I've been wishing we had time to play John Kennedy, Senator John Kennedy, when he gave a grilling to these people who owned their EVs. He just wanted to know how much it was going to cost America to have the majority of its car owners, 75%, he said, driving EVs. And of course, no one could tell him. And he just went in for the kill. It's vintage.
It's a great clip.
It's vintage. So if you can find time, go onto YouTube and I think the title is John Kennedy Goes Hard Grilling Witnesses About EVs. It's only 2 or 3 days old, so it'll give you a giggle. God, we need a giggle, don't we? God, we need a giggle.
We do.
Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.